David Sandler taught that there were three basic types of motivation: incentive, fear, and attitude. Let's start by talking about incentive motivation. Some people feel that you have to pay people to keep them producing. When they're producing because they're being paid, that's considered a type of motivation. Money, trips, prizes, titles, stock options, etc. A good example of incentive motivation is the classic one we're all familiar with, the stick with a string and the carrot being held out in front of the donkey, which pulls the cart simply because he wants the carrot. Now, incentive motivation, in this instance, is effective if the donkey is hungry enough, if the carrot is big enough, and if the load is light enough. It's pretty obvious that incentive motivation, as exemplified here, works when all of the requirements are met. The major weakness of incentive motivation can be seen when we apply this example to the human appetite. As soon as the want, the hunger, is satisfied, it ceases to be a want and no longer motivates behavior. This can readily be seen in the case of the donkey. You see, the donkey gets the carrot, and then you have to wait a while until he's hungry again to get moving. Or the donkey never gets the carrot and becomes discouraged and quits pulling the cart. A Sandler trainer takes us to the next step.
A second way people try to motivate others is through something called fear motivation. In the business community, that can mean layoffs, eliminating privileges, or even demotions. In a family situation, it could mean grounding, a loss of your privileges, and sometimes even scolding. An example of fear motivation can be demonstrated by using the same donkey referred to in the incentive motivation illustration. The donkey's pulling the same cart, but this time, instead of the carrot on a string, the driver has a whip. The use of the whip will produce results. However, the pain must be sufficient enough to motivate the donkey to escape it, and over time, he may become used to one level of pain, and then a more severe pain will be needed to get him moving. In the case of people, the same principle applies. When fear motivation prompts our actions, we become totally subjected to the fear. We can become hesitant, nervous, unable to take decisive action, or we become immune and lose our fear motivation. For instance, fear-motivated employees begin to say things like, "Would you put that in a memo for me, please?" every time you ask them to do something. Or they tune out and don't listen to the directions of the manager. They might even quit. The insecure, fear-ridden person is usually ineffective, primarily because he has to put all his energy into dealing with his fears. In many cases, he may even take on some physical symptoms and actually become ill.
So we see that it's obvious that fear motivation has some very serious drawbacks. For the most part, it's only effective for a short time. Hertzberg, a distinguished psychologist, calls fear motivation KITA, K-I-T-A, which stands for kick in the butt. In Hertzberg's opinion, fear motivation is very rarely effective. Fear motivation, in fact, is merely an extension of our strongest motivation, the law of survival. McGregor, another noted psychologist, says that incentives provide an implied fear because the giving of an incentive automatically implies that you can take it away. Incentive motivation and fear motivation often are two sides of the same coin. Maslow, a renowned psychologist, made a very valuable contribution to motivation when he developed his model of a human's hierarchy of needs. He contends that we're motivated by each of the levels of needs until we satisfy those needs, then the next higher level of needs motivates us. Maslow's model is in the form of a pyramid. Beginning at the bottom, he places physiological needs. Above that are safety needs. Then comes belonging. The step above belonging is esteem, and finally at the top is self-actualization. A Sandler trainer fills us in.
The level at the base of Maslow's pyramid is labeled physiological needs. These are our needs to become comfortable and to have food and shelter. The next level is labeled safety needs, and there are two dimensions to safety needs. One is bodily safety, or freedom from physical harm, and the other is a need for security, or a need to remain in familiar surroundings where we have a sense of security and freedom at a psychological level. Above safety needs are social needs, or our needs for love, affection, and belonging. And as we all know, these needs are a very powerful force. Your desire to belong, to be identified with groups, is a part of you. The next higher level is esteem needs. Again, there are two dimensions. One is the need for self-esteem. And self-esteem is the ability of an individual to accept who he is and to be satisfied with himself. And two is the need to receive recognition and esteem from one's fellow man. This is the need to have one's competence accepted and recognized in the eyes of others. The highest level in Maslow's hierarchy is the need for self-actualization. Briefly stated, these are the needs to become all that we are capable of becoming, to reach one's full potential in one's own terms, to discover who you are, what you are, and to become what you want to be.
Maslow's major contribution is the recognition that higher-level needs do not motivate when lower-level needs haven't been satisfied. Once you've satisfied your physiological needs at the base, they no longer motivate you. At that point, the safety needs motivate you until they're satisfied, and so on, right up the pyramid. Now, certainly Maslow did not mean that you can't have physiological, safety, and belonging needs all at the same time. What he meant is that it's very difficult to seek satisfaction of a belonging need when you're starving to death. The physiological need is stronger. It commands your attention, because without life itself, any other need ceases. Maslow means you can't fully satisfy your self-actualization needs until your other needs, your needs lower in the hierarchy, are met. This is an important fact to remember when you set goals and develop a plan for their achievement. Your life plan should include arrangements to satisfy basic needs, physiological, safety, and social, so that the esteem and self-actualizing needs can then be addressed. It's in the esteem and self-actualizing dimensions that we establish our goals for advancement and achievement.